For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Wes, if we learned anything at this point of the season with Syracuse basketball, it's that they don't want to make things too easy for themselves. And we got another glimpse of that this past Saturday. Matt D'Agostino, Wes Chang here on the Juice and the Cues podcast. And 88-85, Syracuse does beat Notre Dame at home, a team that had been coming in on a losing streak. But Wes, they were up 29 in the first half on Jim Boeheim Day. And it went down to the wire, not something we expected late in the first half when it seemed like they were going to coast to an easy victory for once.
Yeah, Matt, we were texting each other before the game and during the game, we were texting each other. And the first text you had sent was, we may as well record this and it's over. The second text that we were sending, text message chain was, I was complaining to you about the lack of adjustments that Red Archer was making in the second half. And you jokingly sent me a text that said, Syracuse is making adjustments in that they're letting Notre Dame shoot wide open three-pointers at will.
It was an effective adjustment if you were the Fighting Irish, at least. Yes, it was definitely a tale of two halves. And the first half was great. I mean, it was they came out strong. They scored 55 against NC State in the first half before that. And they came out strong. And they were out to a 49-20 lead, balanced scoring. You had Mintz and Starling 12 apiece in the first half. Bell had 10. Brown had 8. Things were all looking great. And then Notre Dame ends the half on a 13-5 run, including a 9-0 spurt in that range. And in the second half, it just kept going. Notre Dame shooting got them back into the game. And it took some last-minute adjustments for Syracuse to pull it out. But a much needed victory nonetheless.
Yeah. And, Matt, to your point, Notre Dame shot 2-for-6 from downtown in the first half. Not bad, but then 10-for-15 from 3-point land in the second half. And, you can live with the Fighting Irish hitting a couple contested threes with hands in their faces, but that wasn't the way Syracuse was playing defense, as to your text message before. So the third straight game where Syracuse really struggled down the stretch against Georgia Tech, 0 field goals in the last 6 minutes. They gave up a 15-point halftime lead against NC State. And then the offense goes quiet against the Irish down the stretch. A quick 9-0 run down the stretch turns an 84-74 lead with 3:30 left into an 86-83 game with 107 left. 9-2 run. And the Orange only scoring 2 points in the last 3 minutes and 30 seconds of the game. So, a win is a win is a win, but just another roller coaster ride for Syracuse when it definitely didn't need to be.
Shrewsbury, whenever you hear the term coach's son, just assume the guy's a good shooter. I think that's just how it goes. And he was lights out for Notre Dame in the second half, so give him credit. What jumped out at you as you're looking at the final box score or anything else like that? For me, Justin Taylor had 10 points, a guy who hit double figures for the seventh time this season, but just for the second time in their last 16 games. Was good to see him contribute to the offense, all five starters in double figures for the Orange.
Yeah, I did like, and Autry pointed out in postgame that he was really happy to see that Taylor had played well. But I will say one thing about Taylor, which is he was brought in as a shooter, and you know, the majority of those points. And they were, it was great to get him involved in the offense, but they were around the hoop. And I think that's what you need to do to get him back in playing shape and, you know, mentally to start shooting the ball well again. But they had to get him going somehow. They get him good looks. They get him off curls and going into the basket rather than trying to have him spot up outside. So that was definitely one thing that I thought was good to see him play. And I think free throw shooting, you know, I think, you know, 13 for 18 on the day, but then, you know, Cuff misses those two free throws that really could have iced the game. So would have liked to have seen a little bit better for that, you know, hashtag free throws matter. I know is a thing in the Syracuse Twitter sphere. And speaking of defense and speaking of Jim Boeheim day, I know that you have a couple comments to make. You know, Syracuse honoring Jim Boeheim, their longtime coach for 40 plus years at Syracuse, the 2003 national champion with Jim Boeheim day. They had the rally towels. They had a post-game speech. Matt, what were you watched that. So what were some of your takeaways from that?
One, he has enough framed documentation now that he could line the walls of his house roughly 92 times over. So what was it? In the county, in the city, in the state, all of the above jurisdictions named it Jim Boeheim Day. I thought it was typical Boeheim. You know, he had plenty thanks to go around, obviously deflecting attention away from him and onto the players and the coaches that he's worked with over the years. And typical, he gets emotional when talking about his family. He gets emotional when talking about Dave Bing. So those are the two things that I noticed there. And he still had a good little Boeheim jab on Chris Bell, calling him out right in the middle of the whole ceremony, saying he needs to play a little more defense. So maybe the whole entire coaching thing hasn't quite made its way out of his system yet. But he thinks Syracuse is still a tournament team with everything that's going on this season. Wes, I thought that was an interesting thing. Obviously, doing a good job lobbying for his school.
Yeah, once a curmudgeon, always a curmudgeon, right? So, I mean, classic Boeheim form, calling out Chris Bell's defense. I mean, this is Jim Boeheim Day. There's 25,000 people in the audience, and he's calling out one of his former players for not boxing out or hustling on defense.
The camera never quite made it over to Bell. I think they were still on, like, Starling and Mintz. Never quite made it over to Bell, probably for the better, because I don't know if I'm, you know, 19, 20 years old in front of everybody there like that. I'm not sure how I handle being called out like that, but it happens. Like that's, I mean, we wouldn't expect a Boeheim, you know, appearance without at least one of those.
No. And, you know, Boeheim talked about three games left in the season. So Matt, those three games, Syracuse is sitting at 18 wins. And I just wanted to play out the scenarios here. And let's just say that Syracuse gets to 21 wins at the end of the season, which means they would beat Virginia Tech. And we're going to have Tim Sullivan on in a little bit to talk about that game at home. Then road games against Louisville and Clemson to finish the season. Let's just play the scenario out. Say they win those three games. So that's 21-10. And you know the magical number for you the whole year was those 20 wins. And then 12-8 in the ACC, 3-7 in quad one games, 4-1 in quad two games, 9-2 in quad three games, 4-0 in quad four games. That's not a terrible resume. And Matt, you're always talking to me about your Italian heritage, so you'll appreciate this. Just when I think I'm out, Syracuse pulls me back in, to paraphrase Michael Corleone. There's still, I think, an outside chance that Syracuse can put together an NCAA resume. And, you know, we both have said and kind of given up on Syracuse at various times of the year, but they win these three games and it starts with Virginia Tech tomorrow. They still have a chance.
It's interesting. Like, you know, they're still 85th in the KenPom, nowhere near Joe Lunardi's bracketology board. And yet at 9-7, Clemson, who is just a half game ahead of Syracuse in the ACC standings, is a 5 seed in Lunardi's bracketology. And Wake Forest at 10-6 and 18-9 overall, who also blew out Syracuse in their one meeting, is one of the four teams that is next out on Lunardi's bracketology. So I'm struggling to find consistency in any sort of projections and stuff like that to find a way for Syracuse to get in, even with the 21. I realize one of those wins, should they come, would be against Clemson, who, again, 5 seed, middle of the pack in the ACC standings, and not in the top 25. It, like, that doesn't all seem to mix very well. So even at 21 wins, as much as I would like to say it, I don't know what that gets them. Still probably need one or two good wins in the ACC tournament to be considered, but I'm not even sure running the table in these next three puts Syracuse firmly in the picture.
Well, I think high noon will be that quadrant one game on the road against Clemson. They're currently 23rd in net right now. And I know we've written off Syracuse a couple times a season, but just again, play the scenario out with me, because NC State currently 77th in net. If they get into the top 75, that goes from a quad two win, which is what it is currently, to a potential fourth quad one win when you combine that, with the Pitt road win, the UNC home win, as well as, you know, a projected Clemson road win. So, you know, again, I think that's the thing we've always talked about with the resume, right? It's constantly changing every day. So you could have only two quad one wins one day, and then the next week, all of a sudden, the other teams win. Suddenly your resume looks a lot better and you haven't lifted a finger. So I think that's something important to keep in mind, is that everything is still fluid. And I do think, to your point, I do think Syracuse is probably out, but I don't think they're completely out. And I think the fact that we're talking about that is this time of year, coming off a loss a couple of weeks ago to Georgia Tech on the road, I think says a lot about how fluid this is.
Yeah, woulda, coulda, shoulda, a win here, a win there, or a better performance against a bigger team, and we may not be having this type of conversation. So we'll see. A couple weeks left, obviously, to go. And, you know, Syracuse, they've put themselves in the conversation, which is a good thing. I don't know if I was a betting man whether I would put money on that, but luckily for you, Wes, I am a betting man. And luckily for us, we've got a new sponsor. Because I do love betting, my friends, and betting them on anything. Sports games, who's fast? That's what Cut allows me to do. The Cut app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states, and Cut has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for Venmo. Now, Wes, I don't know whether it's wise to bet on Syracuse to make the tournament. I don't know what the odds are, but maybe that's something we should look into. And to do so, we could use Cut's promo code for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget the promo code. Now, Cut, put your money where your mouth is. Wes, what is that promo code? I want to make sure we get that correct for our folks. It is BLEAVECUSE, BLEAVCUSE, BLEAVECUSE. We are the Cuse on the Juice the Juice on the Cuse podcast. That two or three times I've done that now, Wes, in a few months. The Juice on the Cuse podcast on the Believe Network, talking Cuse hoops. And next segment, we're going to be talking with Tim Sullivan of Hokie Haven, the Virginia Tech rival site, talking about the upcoming matchup with Va Tech. We'll be back here in a minute. Welcome back to the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Matt D'Agostino and Wes Chang. We are joined by Tim Sullivan of Hokie Haven, the Virginia Tech rival site. Tim, thanks for taking some time with us here. And with the upcoming matchup against the Hokies, who are now 15-12, 7-9 in conference, what can you tell us about what has gone right, what has gone wrong for Va Tech hoops this season?
Yeah, during the non-conference season and during the conference season are kind of two different subsets of answers, which is fairly typical for teams in a high major conference. But at the beginning of the year, center Lynn Kidd and his backup Malajil Poteet looked like completely different players compared to what they've been in the past. They were kind of running the show a little bit. And when you know that Virginia Tech has been a team that has been so dependent on the three-pointer in recent years, it was kind of weird to see. They've still been really dependent on the three-pointer, but Hunter Couture, Sean Padula have been good, not great. They haven't been able to carry the team through ACC play, and that's where you've seen since, you know, the caliber of competition for the centers has gotten tougher. The team has struggled a bit more, and that's the sort of thing that this team doesn't have enough answers to say, okay, when somebody takes away the number one thing that we're trying to do, we don't really have a curveball to go with that fastball, and I think that's kind of seen this team's production fall off a little bit. They've been okay in ACC play, but they pretty consistently have played some of the weakest non-conference schedules available. They make it into one of those big Thanksgiving tournaments, but other than that, they play every MEAC team they can find, I guess. So it means that they don't have a margin for error in the ACC, and they have shown that they can't fall within that very small margin for error. And I think it would be tough to project them into the tournament at this point, which is probably not what they thought as ACC play began.
Tim, you mentioned some of the guys on the team that we know, Sean Padula, Hunter Couture, Lynn Kidd. There's a couple other guys that you haven't mentioned. I was hoping that you could give us a full scouting report on guys like a Tyler Nickel and MJ Collins. Who else should we be looking out for on the Hokies?
Yeah, Nickel is a guy who it seemed like he was going to have a breakout year kind of at the beginning of conference play. He really started to come on a little bit. He's a UNC transfer, but he is from Virginia. He's from the Harrisonburg area. He is the all-time leading high school scorer in the Commonwealth of Virginia, but hardly played for the Tar Heels last year. He's been coming off the bench and kind of being one of those microwave guys who can provide instant offense. He's mostly a three-point shooter, to be quite honest, but he does have, you know, like that 6'5 to 6'7 sort of size where he can be kind of that bigger wing that also drives to the hoop and be more of a complete offensive player. He just hasn't had a ton of the opportunity to do it. Collins is an interesting one because he has been the sort of guy that would have like 20 trillions in the box score over the past, 18 months, however long he's been here. And he's the sort of guy that you just don't even notice he's on the court, even though he plays a ton. Lately, he's been quite a bit more active, for better or for worse, I guess. He's the sort of guy who's going to take a sometimes inadvisable three-point shot, but he does make them at a reasonable clip. Lately, because Sean Padula has had real struggles with the turnovers, his overall numbers don't look that bad, but he's the sort of guy who kind of dribbles his way into a tough situation and gives he donates the turnover to one of his teammates by passing it to a guy who's in an even worse situation who turns it over. They've actually tried to give Collins some of the ball handling responsibility to take that focus off of Padula. Padula's really good when he's a lower usage player. He struggles when he has to carry the team sometimes. So they've tried to give Collins a little bit more of the ball, and he's done okay with that. He's not a natural point guard. He is a guy who can dribble the ball and do other things. He is not a guy who has the vision, kind of that playmaking mindset to be a true point guard, but he's somebody who stepped up a little bit. And I think if they can figure out a way to get him to feel more involved in the offense, I think that's the big thing. Is all last year was this guy looks really talented when he does do something. It's just he so infrequently does something. This year he's doing more stuff and you're seeing some of the cracks a little bit, but I think you see, for a guy who's just a true sophomore, you see a pretty high ceiling in over the next couple of years as well.
So on Tuesday night here, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, 7 p.m., what will the Hokies do well if they are able to win the game? And conversely, if they do not win the game Tuesday, what may have gone wrong for them in this matchup?
A lot of what has been the deciding factor in Hokie wins or losses has been three-point shooting, and that's both ways. They're a very good three-point shooting team. They are an extremely frequent three-point shooting team, but they are prone to cold stretches. I think on the defensive side of the ball is where you see a little bit more variability. They've been a pretty bad three-point defense team over the past few years. Some of that is just the athletic limitations of Padula specifically, because teams are able to break down a defense and kick it out when he can't stay in front of a guy. Opposing teams don't shoot a ton of threes against the Hokies, but when they do, they seem to exceed their season-long kind of numbers, and that's the sort of thing that if the Hokies are hitting their own threes, it doesn't really matter, and Padula is a big part of that. He's an extremely good shooter. Couture is obviously an extremely good shooter. He is not having his best year, but he has been one of the best shooters in the ACC over the past couple seasons, so both of those guys, they can shoot well enough on a given night, not always, but on a given night to make up for anything that this team lacks defensively. But this team is going to lack defensively, and it really is often coming down to whether opponents are making the threes that are generally pretty open that they take. And if a team is a good three-point shooting team, the Hokies really struggle to shoot well enough on the other end to make up for that.
Well, Wes, once again, you've booked us a guest that has a beard, making two out of the three of us with beards on this screen.
I haven't shaved in 2 weeks. Can't you tell that?
And like, you're just not holding up your end of the bargain, Wes. And I think, you know, it's about time we change that. So Tim, if you have any fresh clippings from a beard trim,
I'll donate them over there.
We need to help him out as much as we can. We appreciate the time, Tim. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see the Orange and the Hokies matching up Tuesday at 7 p.m. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wes and Matt here on the Juice and the Cues podcast, wrapping things up as we do with a little final thought. Mine, Wes, going back to Saturday, Jim Boeheim Day. Just fun to see as an alum, as a fan, to see all the faces that were in attendance on Saturday. We see a smattering of them from time to time, but rarely do we get that many in the same building at the same time for public consumption, and that's what we got on Saturday. So whether it was Dave Bing, who we see frequently, Mike Tirico leading the ceremony, Leo Routens, Lawrence Moten, Billy Owens, just all the guys that we've seen over the years. It does make you proud of the Syracuse basketball program. It does show you success and what that looks like. And certainly on a day when they honor the guy who has been most synonymous with Syracuse basketball, I thought it was good to see them show up for Jim Boeheim, and good to see all the guys still enjoying things and taking a game in every now and then. It was good to see all of them in one place.
Yeah, I mentioned before that Jim Boeheim is a curmudgeon, but man, he's very polarizing. Either you are so loyal to him and you're willing to walk through fire for him, or you end up leaving the program and going elsewhere. But for the guys that are loyal to him, you saw it. You saw the product of that on Saturday, that there were so many people that showed up for him and to show up to honor him. So it was really great to see, Matt. And one of the guys that he mentioned is going to be my closing thought, which is the ongoing beef between George Karl and Carmelo Anthony. George Karl making headlines saying that, you know, Carmelo Anthony shouldn't have his number 15 retired. And in fact, the first time it will be retired will be for Nikola Jokic, who is the best number 15 in Denver Nuggets history. So, Carmelo Anthony gets on a podcast called 7 p.m. in Brooklyn. He once overheard Karl saying that he was overrated while he was starting. And then so the old ball coach takes to Twitter and he says this. He says, quote, "Hey, Carmelo Anthony, let's not do this. You're telling stories that are 20 years old. Let's move forward." And then he goes on to say, "And you were overrated, and you wish your game was efficient as Detlef," meaning, you know, Detlef Schrempf, the former, great basketball player. So, Matt, you and I have talked about this a lot over the years, which is that, we always respect Carmelo Anthony. We like him because he brought Syracuse its only national championship in the modern day era in 2003 while we were at school. And he is going to the Hall of Fame. But if he didn't go to Syracuse and he played in the NBA and he was just another NBA player, I don't think you or I would like what he does. And, you know, I know that George Karl caught a lot of heat for it, but some of the things he's saying were true, that he didn't commit to defense and he was only worried about his offensive stats.
Yeah, Carmelo, not my favorite Syracuse guy. Probably most definitely the best that I've seen. I wish I was, able to see more of Dave Bing, because Boeheim says he's the best that he's ever seen in the program. But yeah, I mean, Carmelo is, he is responsible for one of the top five moments of my life, and I will forever be indebted to him for that. But I'm here to tell you now, as somebody who covers the NBA, Nikola Jokic with two MVPs in the last 3 years and an NBA title now, Carmelo Anthony is going to have to pry that number 15 off of Jokic's body if he wants it retired in Denver anytime soon. I think that's pretty well locked in the Mile High City at this point. Wesley, it's that time again. I hate to leave you again. Work on that beard, please. You did a fine job. And just, unlike the Syracuse Orange, You did not have to pull out a last second recovery in this podcast. You held the lead from early on and kept it through the end. So ho-hum victories are good in our books. I don't know where we are in the college basketball podcast bracketology, but I'd like to think we're safely in the field of 68 at this point. So I don't know your thoughts.
We're that plucky little 14 seed that's going to play the 3 seed coming up with an outside chance and an upset for us.
All right. Yeah. All right. I like it. Nobody's going to see us coming, and we've got them right where we want them. I'll take it. So for the mighty engine that could, the Juice and the Cues podcast, and Wes Chang, I'm Matt D'Agostino. Thanks for tuning in here on the Believe Network and on Rivals.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.